As Cliff mentioned, we've been intent on bringing two different themes to focus for the next few weeks. One theme, the teachings of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, in the hopes of catching a glimpse of certain aspects of his life that he would have us incorporate into ours. And then also a study of the last 18 hours of the life of Jesus in an attempt to find a verification, if you can understand what I'm trying to do, a verification of the teachings of Jesus. Often a person under the pressure of the reality of his own death finds himself backing off of certain stands that he took at a time that was less pressing. And I want us to see, and I know where we'll come out. I don't quite know how we're going to get there, but I know that we're going to find that Jesus was a self-validating person. What he said and what he did always is the same, whether he was under the pressure of death or whether he was not under the pressure of death. So that's the rationale as of this approach. This morning we noticed that we were confronted with a test or a choice. Jesus says you must choose God or mammon, one of the two. You can't serve them both. And we noticed that he said that the allurement of our heart, the confusion of our mind, or the mind and its forces and the will are all captured by mammon if we will allow him to capture them. And the allurements of the world pull us, and the flesh serves as a responsive mechanism to the magnet of the earth, and it keeps pulling us down. And Jesus says those who would be his disciples must free themselves of that allurement to where they can break loose from the servitude that has been imposed upon them by mammon. He also says that in service to God, that there is this same demand that we must give our minds, our hearts, our minds and our wills to this God who is Jehovah. For this is the first commandment, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and soul and mind and strength. And so we found ourselves being confronted with this choice. Tonight, I want us to, in accord with the stated purpose of this series on Sunday evening, I want us to examine the events and the teachings, the statements, the opening up of the heart of this great man during the last 18 hours of his life, when the intensity of the pressure and the imminent nature of the coming of the cross was such a burden to him that ordinarily a man would rethink his position and back off of it. But I want us to see that Jesus didn't do that. Tonight, strangely enough, and I didn't plan it like this, I had another sermon that I was going to present, but in studying the last 18 hours of the life of the Lord, I came across a very startling discovery to me. Chapter 13 of John begins this last 18 hours. It continues through his death, about 5 o'clock on Friday evening. John begins this last 18 hours at around 8 o'clock in the evening in chapter 13. They are assembled to eat the supper. Jesus washes their feet. And we're presented in this very first chapter of this segment of the last 18 hours, we're presented with a study in contrasts. And I was shocked to see that, having talked on what we've been talking on and studying what we've been studying, I was shocked to find out that in the very first one of these chapters giving us the closing hours of the Lord's life, to find that there was this study in contrast, and it was painted in such bold relief that it kept shouting, more or less, look at me, this is a verification, or this is a living embodiment of what you've been studying on Sunday morning. Because in this 13th chapter, we find two different kinds of people described. One was Judas, and the other is the Lord Jesus Christ. And both of these, or each of these men, is the living embodiment of that effect that the service to his God has upon a person. Judas is the living embodiment of what it means to serve Mammon. Jesus is the living embodiment of what it means to serve Jehovah God. Tonight, we're going to look at it in terms of glorification. What is it that brings real glory? Jesus thought one thing, Judas thought something else. What do you think? Jesus, back in Matthew and in the beginning part of his ministry and throughout his ministry, out from under the pressure of death, taught that glory doesn't come through the holding on to things that can decay, but that glory is determined by one's submission to the eternal God. That's what he said, and that's what he did. Judas didn't do like that. Listen, if you will. When Jesus had thus spoken, he was troubled in spirit and said, truly, truly, I say to you, one of you will betray me. The disciples looked at one another, uncertain of whom he spoke. One of his disciples, whom Jesus loved, was lying close to the breast of Jesus. So Simon Peter beckoned to him and said, tell us who it is of whom he speaks. So lying thus close to the breast of Jesus, he said to him, Lord, who is it? Jesus answered, it is he to whom I shall give this morsel when I have dipped it. So when he had dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. Then after the morsel, Satan entered into him, and Jesus said to him, what you're going to do, do quickly. Now no one at the table knew why he said this to him. Some thought that because Judas had the money box, Jesus was telling him, buy what we need for the feast, or that he should give something to the poor. So after receiving the morsel, he immediately went out. And it was night. There is a certain eerie connotation to this observation of John. It was night. You see, Jesus, just perhaps the day before, had made this statement and had pled with his disciples and the people of Jerusalem, walk while you have the light. He says, the light is with you a little longer. Walk while you have the light, lest the darkness overtake you. He who walks in the darkness does not know where he's going. And Judas was that kind of a man. He was a man that was sold out to Mammon. I don't know of any other way to describe Judas. Judas was a man who had sold himself lock, stock, and barrel to Mammon. He didn't intend it that way. He thought at first he would just dabble in it. I'm sure that that's the case. I do not believe that Judas foresaw his untimely death when he began first to play with the tempter. He thought he could outfox him. But John, in John the 12th chapter, just simply says that Judas was a thief. The occasion was when they were in the home of Simon the leper in Bethany, and Mary and Martha and Lazarus and Simon the leper and some of his other friends had given Jesus a feast that Saturday before the Passover feast the following Thursday night. And it was during that feast that Mary, the sister of Martha, the sister of Lazarus, had taken a pound of pure nard ointment and had anointed Jesus' head and feet. And the aroma, John says, filled all the house. Judas was incensed. Judas said, what is the explanation for this waste? What is the justification for it? This stuff could have been sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor. But John said he didn't say this because he cared for the poor. He said it because he was a thief. And he kept the money box and was used to taking out of it that which was put in it. And the imperfect tense of the verb means that he was used to it in the sense that he did it over and over and over again, that this was his customary practice. He was a thief. Joanna, the wife of Cusa, who was Herod's steward, was one of the women who followed Jesus on his journeys, and out of her abundance of money, she supplied Jesus' needs and kept him out of the red, you might say, and kept his head above the water, and kept him fed, and kept whatever needs they had to be paid. Luke records this in Luke the 8th chapter. I wonder what Judas thought as he saw this woman, Joanna, and he knew her relationship with her husband and his relationship to Herod. He was Herod's steward. He was in charge of all of his money. I don't want to misjudge the man, but I can't help but think that he thought he had something really good going, and that he was then continually taking out, pilfering out of the bag that this woman kept filling and these other women. And Judas, I wonder how much he had taken from Joanna and from these other women that are mentioned here in Luke the 8th chapter. I wonder. John says he was a thief. And then Mark, in the 12th chapter, simply says that Jesus was sold by Judas for 30 pieces of silver. Judas was that kind of a man. He was sold out to mammon. Consequently, his life was full of darkness. It was full of degradation and gloom and misery and disgrace. The whole gamut was his. John talked about him as going out, and it was night. I think it had a special significance. I think that what Jesus says, that the darkness had finally overcome this man, actually happened in the life of Judas, and he couldn't see it because Jesus says one of the attributes of following mammon is that you don't know where you're going. And that if the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? And here was this poor blind fool stumbling around in the presence of the light of the universe, but because of the greed that had so infected and had so overcome his senses, he couldn't see where he was going. On the previous Saturday, prior to this, perhaps this Wednesday or this Tuesday, I'm not sure when this took place, but I know when the feast took place in the house of Simon the leper. I know when Jesus was anointed by Mary, and I know when Judas became so upset over it. And then Matthew, in Matthew the 26th chapter, draws the parallel to the account in John the 12th chapter. Matthew says that after this event when Mary anointed him, and after Judas had so blown a fuse, it says in the very next verse that Judas went to those priests and the rulers of the people and made a contract upon Jesus to sell him into their hands, and they gave him 30 pieces of silver. And it says he looked for an opportunity from that point on to deliver him into their hands. That was on Saturday. And don't doubt but what it was on Saturday night when Judas went. I doubt that he could stand it any longer. I don't know what he had in mind for what Mary had done. I don't know whether he wanted to sell that stuff. He wanted that 300 denarii of money. And I think probably he was so upset by the fact that it was just robbed and ripped out of his hands. I don't doubt what he went that Saturday night to the rulers and made arrangement. This now that we're talking about tonight is on Thursday night. About 5 days had passed by. He was looking for an opportunity all during this period of time to deliver Jesus over to these men. And then it was said after the supper, no doubt having heard Jesus and his disciples discuss where they were going after the feast, it says that he went out. And then he went to the rulers and made special arrangements with them, no doubt told them where Jesus was going after the supper, and made arrangements to have a band of armed men who would go with him to the garden, and there they would capture him. So all of this began to fit into place, and Judas found himself being the mastermind behind this scheme to bring Jesus Christ to his death. Poor fool. Poor blind fool. He didn't see what he was doing. John says it was night. Matthew, the 27th chapter, discusses what happened. After they left this place, they went on to the garden. They then stayed there for some hours. Judas and his cohorts came up the mountain trail. They arrested Jesus, took him then to Caiaphas and to Annas and to Pilate and to Herod and back to Pilate. But after he had left Caiaphas and Annas in the Sanhedrin, and at about 6 o'clock in the morning, they took him to Pilate's place, having already condemned him by the Jewish law. It says that Judas, seeing that he was condemned, repented himself and brought the money back and tried to get free. He didn't understand that that's where it was going to lead, perhaps. He was so greedy, he really didn't care, but he thought, well, they surely won't kill him, because it indicates that when he saw that actually he had condemned him, He brought the money back and said, wait, I've condemned or I've betrayed innocent blood. But I want you to follow with me. Follow with me in the tracks of Judas. Watch him as he looks panic-stricken at what's happening. And watch him as all this begins to cave in on him. And he goes then to the priests, but follow him, if you will, to the temple area. And go in there with him at 6 o'clock in the morning, trying to find somebody to back out of, trying to find some of the authorities that he had made this contract with. And he went to them and said, wait, I have betrayed innocent blood. Take this money. These calloused men said, you take care of that yourself. That's none of our business. You go, buzz off. But I want you to notice how frantic he was. It says he threw the money down in the temple. But it doesn't just say in the temple. The Greek in this passage says he threw it down in the naos, aston naon, in the holy place, where Judas had no business being what at all, where only priests were allowed. The priests were there. That was their place. This man, frantically, you might could see him just ripping open the curtains and saying, where are you? Having come into the court and there being nobody there. But he knew somebody was somewhere. He threw open this place or the curtain into the holy place and began to plead with them, take back the money. I've made a mistake. They said, that's none of our business. You take care of that. And he threw down the money in that place where he had no business being at all. And he went out and hanged himself. Glory? You call that glory, Judas? He must have tied a rope around his neck and jumped off of a high cliff. Either that or he hung there after hanging himself for so long that his bowels swelled up inside him. And it says, and the Greek here says it, he burst forth in the middle. Acts, the first chapter, describes it. But it's undecided as to whether or not the force of the sudden stop that must have broken his neck and ripped his bowels out of his insides, whether that was it through the sheer force of it, or whether he just hung himself and died and then just hanged there until he just simply fermented and his bowels burst through sheer fermentation and through rot and putrefaction. But it says that his bowels actually gushed out of his insides. Real glory. Real cool. Blind as a bat, thinking that you get glory by grabbing things. If the light that is in you be darkness, how great is the darkness? That's one type of servitude. But look at the other type. And that's that by Jesus of Nazareth. God bless his memory. Jesus is described in these two very simple verses after a whole discussion of his having known where he came from, knowing where he was going, having listened to his disciples argue about glory and honor, arguing about who was the greatest among them, and his then having taken a bowl of water and girded himself with a towel, and as their Lord and their teacher, getting down on his knees to teach them a lesson about what glory is and what glorification is and honor, and having stooped down to do the menial task of a servant, which none of them was willing to do. And then Judas, thinking that he'd get his glory by grabbing and getting more money and increasing his pot. And then it says, when he had gone out, Jesus said, now is the Son of Man glorified, and in him God is glorified. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself and will glorify him at once. What a strange man this was. He was a man who was sold out to God. I look at his life and I think, my, my. He had no other thought ever except for other people. Whenever the thoughts that he had were off of God, they were on other people and how to bring them to God. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. He that follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall walk in the light of life. I want to notice with you, just very briefly, and I will not have time to go in detail, but I want to notice with you a progression of events, not so much events as reflections by the Lord. Listen, his death was it was immediate. It was imminent. That's why he says, now is my soul troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. Now watch him. He's toying with the idea of backing out. Not that he knew, not that he could, not that he would. But he broached the subject himself. Now is my soul troubled. But he says back in verse 23 in John records it, that he begins to talk about his death, that it's necessary for a grain of wheat to fall into the earth and die. And then he says, now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No. For this purpose I have come to this hour. Father, glorify thy name. Listen to him as he then, having resigned himself all over again, having reinforced his commitment to his Father's plan, listen to him as he says, for I have not spoken on my own authority. The Father who sent me has himself given me commandment what to say and how to say it. And I know that his commandment is life eternal. What I say, therefore, I say as the Father has bidden me. Listen to verse 1 of chapter 14. And listen to the context. Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. Do you know when he said that? He said it immediately after he had told Simon Peter, Peter, you're going to deny me before the cock crows. You'll deny me three times. As though he were trying to comfort Peter in perhaps an expression of remorse. And then after he said, you're going to deny me before the cock crows, the very next word he says, let not your heart be troubled. In other words, don't be overburdened with sorrow. Believe in God, Peter, and believe in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, would I have told you that I'm going to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place, I'll come again and receive you to myself. Then in the 30th verse of that chapter, he says, I will no longer talk much with you, for the ruler of this world is coming. He has nothing on me. But I do as the Father has commanded me, so that the world may know that I love the Father. Get up and let's go out. Arise and let us go hence. Look at chapter 16, verse 32. The hour is coming, indeed it has come, when you will be scattered, everyone to his home, and will leave me alone. Yet I'm not alone, for the Father is with me. And then go with him to the garden and listen as Mark records how he prayed and said, Abba, my daddy. Abba, all things are possible to you. If it be thy will, take this cup away from me. Go with me again to Luke's account and listen as he records as a physician how that the very sweat glands of Jesus' face produced blood drops. As it were, great drops of blood falling on the ground and the intense pressure that must have been on him. And then go with Matthew and watch him as he describes how Jesus hung upon the cross and he cried out in the extremity of the trial and the extremity of the excruciating pain and the fact of God's having withdrawn the light from the very earth. The sun was clouded, it was covered, it was eclipsed, and there was darkness over the whole land for 3 hours. And in the midst of this, we have this one crying out, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which means simply, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then listen to him as he again resolves and dedicates himself without reserve and simply says, Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit. But you know what? He had all of the glory and the honor and all of the glitter of all of the kingdoms of all the earth offered to him on a different basis altogether at the beginning of his ministry. Right after his baptism, this same one who had so tempted Judas and had so led him away by his lust for things, that same tempter had come to Jesus and said, "Jesus, if you'll fall down and worship me, I'll give you all of the glory of all of these kingdoms. It's been given to me, and to whomever I want to give it, I can give it. If you'll just fall down and worship me, I'll give it to you." And he offered him this shortcut that wouldn't have involved this terrible death on the cross. And while the world went along looking at Judas as being the cool one, the smart one, taking advantage of the times and hanging on to reality, that that's where glory and honor is, and while they looked at Jesus and looked upon his cross as a cursed thing, a scandal, he still went right along with his father's plans. And his life, of course, it goes without saying, has filled every nook and cranny of every soul and heart and eye of every human that ever beheld him with light. And with honor, and with glory. But I want you to notice this difference. Jesus was not glorified after his death. Jesus was glorified in his death. This verse in our text says so much. When he had gone out, Jesus said, Now is the Son of Man glorified, and in him God is glorified. Now. But Lord, you're going to your death. That's all right, now. Now is the Son of Man glorified. Listen, a few days earlier, when these Greeks came up and wanted to see Jesus, and they came to Philip and they came to Thomas or Andrew, and they both then came to Jesus and said, "Sir, there's some people here that want to see you." Jesus then says in verse 23, he didn't even answer their question. He just simply says, "Now the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified." He wasn't glorified just after his death. He was glorified in it. And this fourth verse that we are talking about tonight, his beauty though bleeding is most exceeding. Let's sing it, and I think you'll understand why. We've asked that you reserve it until now to see the meaning of what it takes to be glorified in a genuine way. Let's sing it, Cliff. Doesn't that express the thought beautifully? And that's what we're talking about tonight. What is the real road to honor and glory? Jesus says it's through suffering and service. Judas says it's through selfishness. Who's right? How differently we look at the road to glory than the way Jesus looked at it. The latter part of this and the last part of this verse of this chapter, little children, in verse 33 it says, "Little children, yet a little while I'm with you. You'll seek me, and as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I'm going you cannot come." And then verse 36 through 38, there's a very interesting footnote to this interlude here, or this incident. Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered, "Where I'm going, you cannot follow now, but you shall follow afterward." Peter said to him, "Lord, why cannot I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Jesus answered, "Will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, the cock will not crow until you have denied me three times." It's hard for us to understand our own hearts. We would be aghast. We would draw back in sheer astonishment if anyone were to say to us, "You're going to be like Judas. You're going to go out of here tonight while it's dark and sell me for 30 pieces of silver." We would say, "Not I, Lord." And maybe every last one of us would mean it. But how many of us, having sat here tonight thinking, "Lord, I'll go with you till I die," will before sunrise deny that we know him, just like Simon Peter did? There are people who are trying and who are selling Jesus for anything they can get for him. There's an ad in the paper tonight or Friday. Linda Lovelace for President is a movie that's been scheduled for the Rialto Theater here. She's the one who starred in Deep Throat, the abandoned, disgraceful movie of every despicable thing you can imagine. There are people bringing movies of her. It's an X-rated movie. Some of our brethren and our sisters have called and objected to it, and once again they've taken it back and said, "Well, we're not going to show it." But you know why they show those things? Money. Money. They say themselves, "I wouldn't look at that stuff." And yet they'll show it to anybody that'll go and look at it and pay them money. Well, we say, "Well, we wouldn't do that." No. But I tell you what we will do. Some of our young people will pay good money to go and see it. Or you'll say, "Well, Lord, I'll never deny you." And yet, if you're not careful before the week is out, you'll either go down here to see some trash, or you'll go to Dallas and see the Rolling Stones and watch them make perversions of everything that's good. It's just difficult to know our hearts. But where are you tonight? Do you see the need? And do you see the meaning? When Jesus says in John 12 and about verse 24 and 25, he says there, "It's necessary for me to die. The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. He who loves his life loses it, and he who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. If anyone serves me, he must follow me. And where I am, there shall my servant be also. If anyone serves me, the Father will honor him." He just simply says, "I've had to go the route of death." And he says that that's the route that everyone who follows him is going to have to go. Not literal, but there's got to be that death to your old sinful nature that causes you to want to live for something other than God. And any of you young people or old people that would frequent such a display of disgrace as these movies, it just simply indicates that you never have really and truly died. And you need to do some serious thinking about it. Do you see the appropriateness then of the method that Jesus described to bring us back to him? Do you see why he requires a death in us? Do you see why he requires a repentance, a change of mind? Do you see then the appropriateness of this burial ground here? You see that? Where you take that dead man that's turned himself over to God, who's denied himself and killed that old nature. And he then comes, as Jesus commanded him, to be immersed in water, to be buried, and to be raised to walk a new life. Well, there's glory in that. There's no shame in that. And it's not that you get your glory sometime later. You get your glory in the midst of all of this. This is where your glory comes. It comes through service and surrender and selflessness. Do you understand that? We extend the invitation of Jesus Christ to you tonight. Do you want to join him? It's your opportunity. But the way of the cross leads home. Must Jesus bear the cross alone? Number 444 will be the invitation hymn. Number 444. And we urge you tonight, whether you're out of Christ and you need to come in faith and be immersed upon your penitent expression of your faith, or whether you as a Christian just simply never have died, you followed more the course of Judas or perhaps of Simon Peter. But Jesus says, if you're going to follow me, you're going to have to follow me. And we offer you that privilege tonight while we stand and sing.